Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
How long is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
You might have to forgive a couple of members of the second captain's presenting team if it takes us a while to warm up today, as we gamely soldiered through the Super Bowl that felt like it would never end last night, until it finally did end somewhere after 4:15 in the morning with the Kansas City Chiefs. I was like, for fuck's sake, I want the San Francisco 49ers to win. I want US Murph to be happy this week. But
at the expense of an hour's sleep.
At that time of night, I did want, somebody has to win this game. So if it has to be the Chiefs, so be it.
Yeah.
And that's how it came to pass.
I did have a sinking feeling when they kicked the 3 points in overtime. I was like, you've just given the ball to Patrick Mahomes on the 25-yard line with unlimited time. And all he has to do is score a touchdown. I mean, I could have gone to bed then. Honestly, I felt like I could have. But
I know, but when you've, you know.
Now, when you've lasted as long as half three.
Well keep going,
what's the difference between half three and 3:45?
Yeah, you're wrecked anyway.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm kind of waking up actually just talking to you guys here. So this is good. Brian's going to be on the show tomorrow for World Service members, of course. Secondcaptains.com, €5 a month plus VAT. If we're feeling a bit sluggish today, I don't know how Brian is going to be feeling, but we always speak to him after he has spoken to his listeners for 4 hours.
Yeah, he'll have had a full night's sleep.
He literally comes to us right after finishing his show. He'll have 4 hours of regrets, recriminations, hard luck stories, all that kind of stuff. And then he'll deliver them all to us in filtered form. Email in after our podcast about Ireland's win versus France in our opening Six Nations game. Forgot to read this out at the time. Owen Lean said, I've long known that Simon is an Irish rugby fan, depressive, losing by 20 points would be a success, as he famously said, against New Zealand. He embodies all of the nerves and negativity that is, I think, an emotional guard against disappointment. I too share this quality, like much of the rest of the Irish population. But once we've won, enjoy the victory. You can't take wins like this for granted. We've only won one away game in France and a handful of times in 50. Sorry, we've only won in France away a handful of times in 50 years. And you start the podcast on our poor line-out stats in the Rugby World Cup. Let's talk about it, Downer. Are we addicted to misery? Yours, a happy Ireland rugby fan. In fairness, I was the one who brought up those line-out stats, but that was to illustrate that we had fixed that problem.
Yeah.
I was trying to be somewhat positive, although I take the point. There was a bit of a tone from the three of us of
what's up with France?
Yeah, France are so bad. How was it so easy? I think it was more a shock than anything else.
Yeah.
The World Cup hangover. I'm not going to stop that phrase.
Yeah. Our previous wins in France involved our greatest ever players, Sexton and O'Driscoll, doing their greatest ever moments.
Yeah.
So it did all feel a little new and a little strange. But I think and I've said this before, I'm a victim of having grown up in the 90s watching Ireland. Wooden spoon, I think, 8 out of 10 years in a row or something like that. Neil Francis panting after 2 lineouts. That was my general memory of the 90s.
And I'm
trying to override that at all times.
Yeah.
Unsuccessfully.
Yeah.
But I am aware
it's a real war in there, isn't it? In that little braid of yours.
And Simon, I know people like
Caelan Darris are like, what are you on about? We're the best country in the world, have been since I was born. Get over it.
We've got young lads popping and just, you know, belting out Ireland's call like nobody's business. Super confident. Everybody right down to our kids are confident now.
You know when we were growing up and your mum or dad would watch it, like an English kid get interviewed on the news or something, and the English kid would just give it like a confident answer.
Really precocious. Yeah,
not shy.
Yeah. Americans especially.
Why aren't you shy? Why aren't you blushing? Like, why are you, you're on TV?
Yeah,
but
well,
no, that's Irish kids now.
Apparently so. Owen, I'll tell you who's making me happy at the moment. Jack Crowley. I felt like we spent the entire gap between the World Cup and the Six Nations talking about how Johnny Sexton was going to be replaced in the Ireland team, who was going to replace him, what impact it would have and all that kind of stuff.
I'll tell you one thing, Johnny Sexton's never absolutely paced a Grand Slam like Jack Crowley.
He's also, in his entire career, not smiled as much as Jack Crowley has in his two games so far. Yeah. There was a bit where, after the second try, it was Dan Sheehan's first try, where Crowley had been involved a couple of times. He does the offload to Henshaw, I think. Eventually works its way out to Dan Sheehan. They score a try. There's a lovely replay that they showed just a minute or so later where the camera stays on Crowley after he's completed the offload and he gets hit by one or two defenders who he committed, falls to the ground, turns his neck. He can see it's worked. He knows it's a try. And he's just lying there, delighted bastard. It's really smiling. Well, it feels like it took Sexton. He got there in the end.
Yeah.
It took most of his career to really show a lot of joy.
Yeah, but I mean, but when he broke O'Gara's points record in the World Cup, he was smiling, but it was more of a shove it up yours, O'Gara. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the early Sexton was absolutely shove it up yours, O'Gara. Yeah. It is, you know,
I mean,
in his face and all that kind of stuff. Crowley is just, look, he's different personalities.
Different personality.
Crowley's a very aesthetically pleasing player to watch. And it's in an effective way. It's not performative, or it's not just for the sake of doing something that will look good. It's effective too. And he has this sort of disguise on his pass where he can leave it literally till the last moment to make up his mind, because he's so comfortable in traffic and he's comfortable getting tackled. And that's one thing that is different. Now, Sexton was a powerful guy, but he didn't actually look that comfortable ploughing into traffic with the ball. He always would rather pass the ball away. Whereas Crowley looks like he's as happy to run with it as he is pass. And if he does get tackled, he's almost got the stature of like an Owen Farrell, where he will be fine if he gets tackled. We don't look like we're getting turned over. So he has that option, and he knows if it is non, he can still carry. And we suddenly have a weapon there that we haven't had for a while with sort of Sexton in his latter years, where the run is on. Now, Sexton made the odd break, but generally defences didn't have to worry too much about Sexton.
I feel like we're already starting to do the thing that everyone has done with Joe Schmidt. Schmidt was the one holding us back all these years. Sexton's finally gone, and now we can open up and start playing some rugby, start running that ball a little bit, you know. What I did like about Sexton was he generally kicked the ball over the crossbar and between those two posts after scoring.
You get points for that, don't you?
You get points for that. And I'd like young Crowley just to maybe do that a bit more consistently.
Yeah, there was a debate on Virgin Media after, I don't know if you saw it, where Matt Williams was saying that you need a kicker at 85%, and without that, forget about it. You're not going to win any big competition, which isn't necessarily true. Like, Raj won the Champions Cup with Ehi West at out half. But in general, like, it's a Andre Pollard, it's a Dan Carter, it's a Johnny Wilkinson that wins the World Cups and slams and all the rest of it. Yeah. So we don't need, Neil Jenkins 90%er, but you need somebody who's around the same percentage every game. You don't
Google
want to fluctuate
them, kids, by the way.
You don't need a Paul Thorburn.
Well, if only we could all have a Thorburn.
Yeah. I'm desperately trying to remember the England fullback.
Marcus Rose, no.
No. Like
Dusty hair.
Incredibly thin early 90s England fullback.
Was he a goal kicker?
Goal kicker. Right.
You look for him.
Dusty hair, I think. Dusty hair.
Metronomic he was.
Jerry Thornley. Fox is too modern a reference.
Jerry Thornley is on today with Tom English at BBC Scotland. The dream of a Grand Slam decider. Was it a dream? I had the dream. I was really looking forward to the way the fixture list was panning out. If Scotland can beat France, we could be set up for a Grand Slam decider. Ireland and Scotland both unbeaten going into the last game. But that dream is no more. I know you've got somebody in mind there, Murphy, if you found the name.
Sorry? No.
Oh, sorry, just the way you were deciding. You're just disappointed about the Scotland thing.
I'm walking in chewing gum here at the same time, Owen. I'm really disappointed for Scotland. I believe it was the referee, Nick Berry, who said, it's not going to be a Grand Slam for you this year.
Yeah, well,
Scotland.
There was controversy. Sam Skinner looking like he'd won it at the death. But the referee, Sam Skinner sounds kind of like a player from that Paul
Mickey
Thorburn
Skinner.
But
much.
Yeah, the referee said no try in the field, and he stuck with that on-field decision after consulting with his TMO. There was a glimmer of hope during the conversation between referee Nick Berry and TMO Brian McNeice.
On the foot, and then it's gone and grounded in goal. So I need to change my on-field decision to a try.
It's gone and grounded it in goal. So I need to change my on-field decision to a try. It sounds like is what he's saying there. But ultimately, either Well, he didn't change his mind, or he briefly changed his mind and then changed his mind back.
Yeah.
Didn't give the try.
They took 5 minutes to end up with the wrong decision.
Was it definitely the wrong decision, though?
Oh, yeah. I missed a try, definitely.
Can you definitely see it in any of the replays? Because once it hasn't been given and the on-field decision, yeah, was there any replay?
There's stills of a ball that there's no possibility of any kind of limb or finger or shoe being underneath it. So it is a try. And I think they kind of knew by the end, but they were more worried about the protocol of, I've said this isn't a try initially, and the TMO listening to that and thinking, well, I really need 100% evidence to overturn the on-field decision. But what they should have is the option for the ref, because they want the ref to take control over the TMO. They felt the TMO had too much power. They weren't sure who really was in charge here. So they said the ref now has to guide them. It used to be this, but the ref now says, I think it's on-field, it's a try or it's a no try, but I need evidence for you to overturn that. So then the TMO has to find something conclusive, which he wasn't going to find, particularly with those angles.
But
what they should do is, if the ref feels confident about it, absolutely let him guide the TMO. But if he doesn't feel confident about it, leave him both options. You know, that's not a
the balance of probability was that is, you know, that's 95% a try. And the fact that they couldn't find a TV angle doesn't change the, like, the actual physical fact that the ball couldn't be any closer to the ground. There is no room for anything to be between the ball and the ground in the angles that we saw. Simon Hodgkinson, by the way, was the hero of the 1991 Grand Slam team. But yeah, I mean, it was. I mean, I actually did feel really sorry for Scotland, because it was like a matter of semantics that denied them the win.
I felt sorry for the tournament, because it would have been better if they had beaten France to keep them rumbling along.
It's actually quite a pivotal result in Scotland's evolution too. Like, there's not many of these where they'll get to beat France and they outplayed France.
Yeah.
But for them to go on, like, that would give them confidence for the next game, something to finally a competition they could potentially win, something to really go for. When that's robbed of you, now there was other moments they could have won and all the rest of it, but that is essentially robbed Scotland of a chance to win something big for the first time in a long time. And it is a genuinely talented team. I know we joke about them and all that. Finn Russell was absolutely brilliant. Like, he created that turnover at the end.
Russell was speaking to BBC after the match, and he wasn't getting caught up too much in publicly, anyway, in the sense of grievance being nursed by his nation.
Personally, I believe that was a try at the end, but that's up to the referee to decide that. So that's what he's there to the job for. We've got to take this defeat in the chin. We've got to get better for England. So we can't let the referee decide what happened in the game. That's up to us to play better and make these games or make these matches a victory.
And our weekly Finn Russell clip.
He's actually speaking very well as a captain, I think. The one final thing I'd say about that, if Nick Berry is going to guide the TMO and say, I think on-field was no try, you know the way you sometimes see refs almost like bury their head in there, like get right into the bottom of the ruck, nearly at the grass, and see, unless you've done that, then you probably shouldn't be guiding the TMO.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
A lot of times you say something on this show and you're like, geez, you know, that could come back to bite me in the arse now, you know. But like, I can just come out and say what I like about the Scotland rugby team. You'll never ever get a chance to play audio back to me and be like, what were you thinking? How could you have come out and said such a thing?
Oh, Flood of Scotland, when will we see your like again?
Scotland are a disgrace to world sport.
That fought and died for
the jobs.
Your wee it hill and glen.
And you, you cunt!
Stood against heaven.
My name's Jacqueline McCaffrey.
Proud Edward's army.
You're always on the team of teal. Never fit!
And sent him home.
The Scotland rugby team, the sporting world's greatest pinata.
Do you think again?
He's over the line, he's scored, and Scotland get the try they thoroughly deserve.
Like, I can sit here year after year and laugh at the Scottish rugby team, and I'll never be called out there. It's an amazing freedom that I have.
Three Scotsmen, it's been that all day, and it's come loose, and Hamish Watson belts it into the sand, and that is it! And 38 years of hurt are over for Scottish rugby.
Jerry's in studio with us. Jerry, thanks for making it in.
Pleasure.
And we can hear the howls of injustice in Scotland from all the way over here. So Tom English is on today. Hi, Tom.
I am the honorary Scotsman today.
You are.
Hello,
indeed.
Boys.
Yes, yes. Yeah. We'll get to them in a second. But Ireland beating Italy by 36 points to nil. And the nil bit is interesting, Jerry. Obviously, to keep any international team, even if it's Italy in the Six Nations, to nil is impressive. It's the first time Ireland have done this to anybody in the Five or Six Nations since 1987, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a stat from Russ Petty about the last 12 Six Nations games against anyone. Ireland only conceded 12 tries. The next best defence is France with 27, which is an amazing disparity. So might be the sexiest start to talk about, but the defence wins championships, as they say.
Absolutely. And you'd have to say that Ireland have had the best defence now for about, this is the third season in a row, effectively, where over that period of time they've had much of the best defence, not just the last six games. And I thought their line speed and defending in the last two games has been really good. Like, even in Marseille, like the two big power plays in the French, arguably the second one wasn't even a touchdown for all the attacks that the French had. And then once Italy missed that penalty yesterday, they never really looked like getting off zero, did they? Like, it was the comfiest clean sheet you'll ever keep in a rugby international match. Their line speed's very good. Their tackle execution is very good. You have to say that the 10, 12, 13 axes have led the lineup really well, made their tackles. Gary Reynolds hasn't even been missed, I think it's fair to say, such has been Robbie Henshaw's form. And if you ever want to just see how good a defensive side Ireland have become, you just look at James Lowe. I mean, the amount of times he makes intercepts, good reads, comes off his wing, makes tackles, or shepherds across the line like he did. I think he shepherded three French players and eventually tackled a third player in Marseille. And he just makes consistently good reads and defence now to augment that astonishing kicking game. And
he also enjoys
scoring.
It, Jerry, as
yes.
well, which is something that you
yeah.
think of an attacking player is kind of made to do this stuff that clearly he hasn't grown up really greatly embracing. They might, right? Like, it's something that they know they have to do to get in the team, but he seems to actually really love that part of it.
Yeah, it's been a change in mentality completely for him. He didn't particularly enjoy defending when he first came over. He admits it himself. He wasn't particularly good at it. He got dropped out of the team because of his defending. It was never because of his attacking game. And now he's become the ultimate team player. You know, he's good over the ball. He wins jackals. He's physically, he uses physicality in defence. He's just become a very complete team player, as well as retaining that X factor we saw for the try. And what he's, there was a period, do you remember that one autumn window where he was injured? I think it was 22 when he missed the wins against Australia and South Africa. And really, Ireland had no offloading game without him because he's the best offloader in Irish rugby as well. So he enables others. But then you put Jack Crowley and Stuart McCluskey in the team and suddenly Ireland are offloading the ball like we haven't seen in quite some time.
Yeah, the whole midfield looked great.
Yeah,
and
it did.
Crowley is kind of the most interesting thing to come out of this game from an Irish perspective,
agree.
I think.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's Italy, right? And his pack were totally dominant, as in Crowley's pack. But that sort of creativity is quite rare. And I think there's a couple of things that go into it. It's calm, he's confident, but he has great reflexes. Like, if it's not on, he still has the ability to pull it back and just carry into contact and recycle. So it's not like, oh God, if this offload doesn't happen, or if this slightly tricky or, I suppose, risky play doesn't come off, then we're screwed and it's a turnover, as can happen some out-halves. You sort of feel he has both options at all times and he can change his mind late because of that strength, because of that calm, and because of the reflexes, which you don't really associate with an out-half all that often.
No, you don't. And add into that as well, great footwork. Yep. Really good footwork just before contact. So that means he can take the contact off on his terms. And but he's prepared to take a late hit by going to the line and putting somebody into space as well. I mean, he was almost smiling when he gave that short little no-look pass to Hugo Keenan as James Lowe would look like it was going to James Lowe out the back.
Even on the replay on Twitter, it still looks like it's going to him.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
And then, you think as well, like the little goose step, that was almost reminiscent of his under-20s days. Mm. And he's always been a class player. He was a brilliant under-20s out half, but he was just a little bit unlucky in that there was a logjam at 10 in Munster and the pandemic was no club rugby either. So he lost about over a year to rugby, a bit like, well, a few of them, like Joe McCarthy as well. So what he's done since, once now he's got a run in 10, you can see that he just was really enjoying himself yesterday. Mm. He was really, like, he enjoyed, and that goose step and take out two players off the road for Nash, bounces to his feet, scores a try. Crazy to think that's his first senior try, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's crazy to think. Like, he's such a, there'll be more. And I love the way he took out two players as well. Footwork, freed his right hand onto Robbie Henshaw, onto McCluskey for the Dan Sheehan try. The only caveat, really, I wouldn't mind the fact that he's making a few errors. There were less errors, but an out half is probably always going to make the most errors because he has to make the most decisions.
Mm.
And so there's going to be mistakes. And there will be bad days and there'll be other days when it goes wrong. And I presume his goal kicking will improve. The conversion rate of conversions yesterday and again in the Munster defeats, Toulon and Northampton. But we know he can do it because we saw him do it in Marseille. He would kick beautifully that night. He will get better at that. I just think there was enough, without shouting from the rooftops, that there was enough. I agree with you, totally. It was the most encouraging aspect of the opening two rounds for me. There was enough in Jack Crowley's performance to suggest that not only would there be life after Johnny Sexton, but there will be vibrant life after Johnny Sexton.
What do you reckon, Tom?
Tom, I was going to ask you specifically on first of all, on his creativity, but on the penalties as well, because there's debate on TV here afterwards that you should be, I think Matt Williams is saying you should be at 85% or you don't win big comps, which I don't know if that's strictly true, but, you know, with the kicker, do you want a guy who's always at, say, 70% rather than a guy who's at 90 and then 50 from week to week?
Listen, you want an all-round player, and I think Crowley's an all-round player. I don't know. I mean, are people seriously picking holes here? I mean, is that what's happening?
Not really, but I mean, the missed kicks were quite obvious. I mean, and if it's your out half as you go ahead, like, it didn't matter against Italy, but it will matter in bigger games.
Yeah, but we know, as Jerry says, we know this guy's a good kicker, you know? So it wouldn't bother me. The missed kicks against Italy would not bother me at all, because I think he's a big game player. I'm really encouraged. Like at the outset of this Six Nations, if you'd said to me that Ireland would finish a decent second, but that McCarthy and Crowley would be bedded into the team and look comfortable, I'd have said, you know what? I'm really happy with that. I'm happy with that.
True.
But it seems to be going to be more than that, way more than that, by the looks of it. I mean, the way they're going to win a Grand Slam while never off the bridle, using a horse racing term. First two games, I think they've been very, very, obviously Marseille was class, very professional job against Italy, and I don't see anyone touching them.
Yeah, it really is hard to see, isn't it? Because there's the line out, which we mentioned last week, was perfect again. Was it perfect both weeks?
At both, so
we
13 had, out of 13.
26
after
in a row.
Talk, and, you know, we read an email criticising Paul O'Connell, which is fair, or more asking why O'Connell
wasn't
being criticised.
We'd only held a couple more weeks. Oh, we wouldn't have to look
And then so silly. Since then, it's absolutely perfect. And stealing loads of theirs as well. And they're the kind of things that, you know, you can look, I'm always still, there's a bit of residual stuff. You're going to Twickenham. You could get turned over by England, but you're not going to get turned over by England if your set piece is really good, which ours has been so far.
Yeah, I would say that England game, without completely dismissing Wales, who, as Andy Farrell said after the game, will be better for another 2 weeks working with Warren Gatland, and they've shown more than we thought they would show. Mm. I think that's fair to say. That try against England the first half was a beauty, the second one, and their maul was good enough to maul England in for a penalty try. So even if they never look like winning the game the second half, they still have made strides, the Wales, and they will be tricky, although, of course, you'd be amazed if Ireland didn't win that game. Twickenham could be tricky for the simple reason that by the time Ireland go there, conceivably England, I know Tom will disagree, but they could beat Scotland and Murrayfield. And if they did, they'd go into that Twickenham game with 9 wins out of 10. Their only defeat being late on in a World Cup semi-final.
That seems so weird.
It does seem weird, but that's the reality. And the other thing as well, Ireland are now the prized scalp in this Six Nations. Mm-hmm. The team in green heading over to Twickenham. Twickenham will be febrile. They'll be the underdogs. England is underdogs at home to Ireland. That crowd and that team will revel in that.
And a bit like the World Cup, they've got to sort of ease themselves into a competition with relatively easy games feel good about themselves. Mm. They're better than any other nation. And I include even like South Africa and New Zealand in this, at sort of fluffing themselves up and playing a bit above themselves because they think they're a bit better than they are. And then they kind of fulfill that feeling about themselves by actually playing a bit better. And George Ford is kicking really well. Their basics will be quite well. I sort of feel like Borthwick is going to make them a team that's quite hard to beat, which is
hard to watch and hard to
beat. Which is very different from a good team, but still really annoying to play. And actually, I would suspect that would be a really close game in Twickenham, Tom.
Listen, home advantage nearly always counts for something. Mm-hmm. I just look at this England team, and yes, they're trying to break out of the straitjacket that they were previously in throughout the World Cup, but they're doing it unconvincingly. You know, when they got in their first game against Italy, they got 10 points cleared second half, and they stopped playing. It's almost like they reverted to type. Say, hang on, whoa, this is too adventurous, and. Yeah. I think they're on a horrible word, journey. I'm not sure if they're ever going to get to their destination by trying to play expansive rugby under Steve Borthwick, because I think it just endemic in Borthwick's coaching philosophy is low risk. And I think they're struggling between trying to become more adventurous and trying to be true to what Borthwick wants, which is a kind of solid, gnarled team. I think Ireland pick off those sides. I just cannot see, even though it's Twickenham, even though it's a massive crowd and England will be massive up for it. And Jerry is right. The target on Ireland's back against every team in the world now. I think Ireland is just too clever for England. There's too many good players. Their cohesion is too strong. The players are too good. And England are just in that uncertain place. I'd be very surprised if Ireland slipped up at Twickenham.
Mm. And as you say, we've so many good players playing really well, like Sheehan, Tyburn, Doris, Keenan, Bundy, Lowe, Gibson Park, even all close to being the best players in their position in the world, but they're on form and they're the right age and all that sort of stuff with the right coach. And we have depth, it seems, everywhere except probably Loosehead, even though Keane Healy's actually scrummaging very well and you wouldn't worry about it too much. And then full back, and Keenan gets an injury, and you suddenly think, it's one of the strangest things about Farrell's reign is how little he's played any other full back. And it's partly because Keenan's so fit and can play 80 and doesn't get injured, but then he takes a knock and you go, could this whole thing be shaken by one injury?
And he's just been such a brilliant player in the last two games as well. And in Marseille, he gets very little time on the ball, but he makes three outstanding defensive reads and executes the tackles. Twice in Penno and once in some big lumbering number eight was. I can't remember who was. Was it Aldridge? Was it Ramos? Who? But three brilliant reads. And then yesterday, he gets his hands on the ball. He ignites the game with that tap and go from his own 22. He ignites the second half again, like with that call to Casey for the chip, and eats up the ground to gather the ball. He really ignited both halves of the game. He ran well. We only ever knows him now when he makes a mistake. He's so error-free. And he's got to be one of the best fullbacks in the world. And he's been so touch-wood resilient until now that you would hate to see him miss this game, not least because Jimmy O'Brien's injured, Mac Hansen's injured. The cupboard is fairly bare at fullback anyway. Hence the bit of a call for even Simon Zeebo on the base of four or five games just to be back in the squad. There's no obvious alternative to Keenan unless maybe they put James Lowe there. Hansen or O'Brien would have been the option till now. I hope they don't go Jack Crowley there, because I've just enjoyed Jack Crowley playing so much at 10. I want to see him stay there. I want to see him start all five games in what will hopefully be an historic campaign for Ireland and get his out half career really up and running. So the only other alternative I can think of then is maybe Kieran Frawley at fullback. But yeah, it's the options are not plentiful.
Tom, just briefly as well on Henshaw, who's really impressed me, having not really played that well for a while now, mainly because of injury. But he's at the point now where I could see him keeping Ringrose out of the team, maybe.
Yeah, and if you want anything to illustrate Ireland's strength and depth, we're talking Henshaw versus Ringrose. Two players who would walk into, I think, any other Six Nations team, including France. World-class players, both of them. Henshaw, phenomenal. Mental strength of that guy is incredible. Ringrose, the same. We're talking two thoroughbreds here, right? And McCloskey comes in and does a terrific job against Italy. They're so well-stocked in the midfield. You could have any combination of the four and go up against anybody in the world and you'd fancy your chances. I mean, that's unprecedented, you know. Henshaw is Henshaw's always been a class player, hasn't he? For a long time. Injuries have not been kind to him. But even he comes back, the resilience of this guy is unreal. I mean, he's had injuries, he comes back, he plays out of his skin, gets injured, comes back out of his skin. It's just, I mean, I have a world of respect for him.
We should have seen it coming. His form for Leinster had been very good. He had a run of injury-free games, which he hasn't had, and I can't remember how long. His performance away to Leicester and Welford Road was outstanding. We should have seen it coming that, you know, this was Robbie Henshaw was back, and he showed it in the way that he stood up and did Matthew Jalibert like a kipper in Marseille before he passed off the deck for Caelan Doris to put Calvin Nash over. Some wonderful carries. He deserved a try. Pity his try was ruled out. His performance really deserved one. And we haven't missed Gary Ringrose. The same way that Ireland haven't missed Johnny Sexton, Ireland haven't missed Gary Ringrose either, which is remarkable. And I agree with you. I think Robbie Henshaw is now the man in situ and he probably retains the jersey.
I still feel it's a pick. If I'm a professional rugby coach and I'm looking at Gary Ringrose in my dressing room and saying, mate, you're on the bench.
I think he will be on the bench. Yeah. I think that's
a good number. When fully fit in
the cover. What a phenomenal bench.
Yeah, no, he's a good player to cover. But, super.
It comes down to the last 10 minutes at, against whoever. And you've got Gary Ringrose coming off your bench. You're all right.
Well, McCluskey's unlucky, isn't he? In any other era, he wins 50-plus caps. He's got not only two Lions centres, but probably a third who should have been a Lions centre by now.
And you got to respect the fact that a guy, as his team, as in Ulster, fall apart, he's kept his form and his confidence.
Like that was a really nice little unselfish pass for Sheen. He probably could have gone himself. The pass for James Lowe is a beauty. Square on, gets good pace in the ball, skip pass, gives Lowe the chance to do what he does. And that offloading game, that offload he made was the offload of the, for the try of the day, that was the offload of the day. And where Ireland used to be totally dependent on James Lowe for offloads, you now suddenly have McCluskey and Crowley in the mix. It's suddenly an offloading team. And he probably misses out to Bundy, though, because Bundy Aki, he's only missed the one game now and not two. And also, Bundy Aki's form has just been phenomenal.
Yeah, crazy stuff. Tom, tell us about the scandal at Murrayfield, please.
Where do you want to start?
Well, start at the end, exactly. Yeah, I mean, what was the... just a whole... Because, every country gets these occasionally in different sports, these moments where they feel this sort of righteous indignation. And, it's kind of a... In some ways, it's a positive emotion. I don't know, but it was
unifying.
Unifying in certain ways, yeah. But what was it like at Murrayfield?
Yeah, it was bizarre. We could hear on-field decision, no try. And we thought kind of that was that. And then the replay started to come up on the big screen. Hang on a second. That looks suspiciously like a ball on the ground. And then we hear Brian McNeice, the TMO, says, there is the ball on the ground. And the whole stadium erupted. Gregor Townsend and his coaches were up on their feet. And everyone thought that that's it. It looked like the decision had been reversed. There was going to be a try. And then from that position, there is the ball on the ground. Somehow there was this inexplicable U-turn from McNeice and Nick Berry, who I thought was terrible in the whole game, actually. And there's no try. And it sends a massive deflation and anger. Gregor Townsend doesn't throw his toys out of the pram. He's not a guy who rants and raves, but you can tell a Townsend fury. And he was furious afterwards, trying to keep a lid on it, and did. But you can tell with the use of his words, he was incensed. And they still are, actually. As of this morning, I spoke to somebody in the camp. They're still enraged.
Were they right to be, Jerry?
Put yourself in their shoes. We'd be fairly enraged if we were in that position as well. I think rugby should, it's tying itself in knots with semantics. Referees come on the ground saying, on-field decision is such and such. Well, if you're not certain it's a try or not a try, don't call it as an on-field decision. Just go to the TMO and say, you've got the benefit of the cameras. I think it might be a try or I think it probably isn't. Mm-hmm. But either way, try or no try. None of this on-field decision, that try that never was, that France scored, the second try in Marseille.
Gabrielek,
that was not a try.
No.
And there's no camera angle that could prove it was a try. But for some reason, both the touch judge and the referee say on-field decision a try. How can you make a call like that if you haven't seen it? Yeah. If it's not seen. So just none of this on-field decision is. If you're going to the TMO, help us out here, mate. I'm not sure.
It's absolutely, Jerry. It's like it's not an on-field decision when you haven't seen it.
Exactly.
It's an on-field hunch. That's all it is. It's a hunch. It's a guess.
My on-field hunch is. Could you help me out here?
I think they're
good. And that's a tablet of stone then, And I still can't get out of them. And I don't criticise referees. I don't, because I know it's a brutally hard job.
Yep.
Berry was very poor throughout the game. France, I think their penalty count at the end was about 9 or something. It could have been 18 because they were offside permanently. It was just unbelievable. But then we get to the piece de resistance at the end, and I just still don't know why McNeice went from the ball is on the ground to the ball's not on the ground. He saw something and then he unsaw it. It's just bizarre. The whole episode was totally bizarre.
I think they're almost afraid of getting in trouble with the judges who judge how they've done, rather than what happened here, what actually happened, and just give that decision.
I could agree to more. And also us, podcasts, social media, television, everybody's judging them. Mm. I'd be paranoid with fear if I was being judged by so many people. They're getting judged to a level that none of the players are getting judged.
There's also like the Wayne Barnes precedent of family getting threatened.
Yeah, and it's, as Tom says, it's a brutally tough game to referee. It's got so many laws. None of us know them. And like, they're going to get things wrong all the time. And also, the more we make a fuss of these decisions, the more damaging it is then to the game. Mm. But it's a real problem for rugby generally that, I mean, I was talking to a former international, he was after the Marseille game, the next day in the airport, I'm really happy with the way the World Cup was refereed. I don't think it had a material effect on any of the games. And I actually fundamentally disagreed with him. I thought three of the quarterfinals might have gone a different way with a different referee.
Yeah.
And that's just not sustainable as a sport, is it?
Also, what a low bar are we setting?
Yes.
The ref didn't have that much influence on the result.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. I mean, like, Tom, you mightn't agree, but when Gael Ficou makes that break for the line, it's arguably a seatbelt tackle, isn't it, by Duane van der Merwe? And he's certainly offside when he picks up the intercept straight after. So you're going to get decisions, wrong decisions in every game. The one thing I can't stand, you hear it in football, all we want is consistency. Nobody's consistent. You can't get it. It's impossible.
Also, nobody wants consistency. Everybody wants decisions made on behalf of their team.
Yeah.
That's what my sports editor says at the BBC. All I want from your writing is consistency. I said, good luck. Consistency doesn't exist in life. Unfortunately.
No.
And yeah, I think van der Merwe was definitely offside.
Yeah.
So they got away with that. It's a debate whether the tackle was on the shoulder or higher than that. Nigel Owens reckoned it was on the shoulder. It was close. Mm. It was very close. But he was offside. There's no doubt about that. So that was another thing that I think Nick Berry got wrong on the day.
Would you not agree overall that Scotland just should have won, as Finn Russell said afterwards, they should have taken care of business before then?
They should have done. I mean, that passage of play before half-time. Look, Scotland played very well in the first half, I thought.
Yeah.
The kicking game was, they won the year big time. France were all over the place. Their line-out was poor. They were knocking on all over the place. Apart from the Ficou try, they didn't create a whole lot at all. No. So Scotland, and then they went 16-10 ahead. But that passage of play before the half was out when Antonio was off. These scrums.
Yeah. That was the winning of it there, wasn't it?
Yeah, they should have found a way.
Yeah.
They should have found a way to score there. And they didn't find a way. Now there's a lot of reasons for that, but they didn't get the job done. And that ultimately came back to haunt them, as well as the decision at the end. It was it was really deflating to be at Murray. But the second half was an abomination of a half as well, with all the kicking and the rest of it. But Scotland, they should have scored. France defense was good. They survived. Scotland should have been a bit more creative. There were players out wide. They could have gone out wide. Even in the last play for the Sam Skinner try that wasn't, they could have gone wide. So there's a lot of...
There's a screen grab of a 4-on-1 overlap.
Yeah, they could have done all of that. But absolutely, they could have. And you could argue they should have gone wide rather than take the risk with Skinner going for the line. They could have spread it wide. Riskier. But
why is it riskier, by the way? I think that's an old-fashioned idea. The idea that more passing is more...
Particularly with the new ruling
riskier.
That if you're held up over the line, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think...
I'd much rather have Hugh Jones flying onto that ball or whoever, van der Merwe, than a slow forward with no momentum, more than likely going to get held up.
But at the very least,
not enough evidence that it was a try.
Yeah, but the bottom line, the ball was on the ground, right? Because Brian McNeice said the ball was on the ground.
But as Finn Russell says, your captain, take it out of the hands of the ref.
Yeah, absolutely. You could go back. We can go around in circles on that, you know.
But I just think it's a general thing in rugby now at the moment where the forwards are taking too much on close to the line, especially with this new rule where you're leaving yourself open to being held up.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's coulda, woulda, shoulda, you know.
Mm.
And Scotland will say, yeah, you know, we could have gone wide and we could have scored and taken it out of the hands of the referee, but we did score.
As France did for their try, that brilliant pass from Jalibert to Ficou.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So there was a lot in it, you know.
What do you think they should have been doing when they were ahead in that second half and there was the kick tennis, DuPont rule and all that stuff?
I think they controlled it again. They were 16-10 ahead. France had shown little or nothing apart from the Ficou try. I was around the 60-minute mark when it became real kick tennis. And Scotland were comfortable. And, like, they went to sleep for the BLBRE try. And that was it. You know, they really, that was the one moment they got suckered in that moment, you know? But there was no sign of that coming. That was a try that dropped out of the sky. So they did get suckered. They went from controlling the game and France showing nothing to being behind, because at a 5 minute spell, because they conceded a penalty, that was another 3 points for France. All of a sudden, France had control of the game. I think, in hindsight, and you know, you look at the Kyle Rowe break right at the end. Mm. If George Horn had been on the pitch, he'd have been on Kyle Rowe's shoulder. I'd bet the house on it, because that's what George Horn does. He's got an unbelievable try scoring record. Kind of like, he's a scrum half, but he's kind of like a Chris Ashton. He's always on the shoulder of the ball carrier. That's how he scores all of his tries. And I think he would have been up with playing, and I think he'd have been there to take a pass from Kyle Rowe, and they might well have scored off that move. But, you know, it's all, doesn't matter now, does it?
You might need to explain the DuPont rule for some people. Say.
Yeah, basically, so say you often saw Finn Russell catch a ball in his own 22 around there. The French team can't run at him until he's run 5 metres. So Finn Russell can stay still, and then the French chasers also have to stay still. So you could literally, it could go on forever. It's basically a loophole in the laws. But the other thing it does is allows big fours like a Tony just stand there and watch the kick tennis go on for 5 minutes. Yeah,
have a rest. Yeah. And people are saying, oh, you know, Scotland was space. Scotland should have attacked. Why should Scotland have attacked? Because, you know, they're controlling the game, and also France have an advantage. So they've got, you know, they've got
6 points isn't a very big lead with those French wingers. France are always going to pull out a try probably from somewhere.
But when the kick tennis was going, what should they have done?
Well, there was definitely counter-attack opportunities for sure.
But every France player was like they were, the defensive line was set. You're talking about, that's what France wanted them to do. France clearly wanted them to counter-attack and try and get a turnover and play off that. So why should
France wanted them to do isn't too clear, I don't think. And whatever they're seeking to do isn't working. Like, they were terrible. They had no line out. Scotland should have won that game. Scotland had several opportunities.
They were arguably worse than they were in Marseille. They should be 2 defeats from 2. Yeah. They're the story of the tournament in many ways.
Yeah.
Like, everybody else is pretty much where they were in the last couple of years, except France. Yeah. They're the ones that have gone seriously backwards. And you can't just attribute it to the absence of DuPont, although clearly we can now see that they, Fabien Galthié and Sean Edwards, or the attack coach Laurent Labbé, daren't tell Antoine DuPont how to play rugby. How could you? So DuPont would take on so much himself, and that's what made them so unpredictable. Take him out of the equation, I feel a little bit sorry for Luku, in that he looks a bit dazzled by what the role he's been handed. It must be tough when you're permanently sitting 80 minutes on the bench and never coming on for an icon or a talisman or whatever, the world's greatest player, and then suddenly you're thrust into the starting role. But they've just gone backwards so much. And even the BLBRE treatment, he plays in the quarterfinal when he probably shouldn't have. Then he's dropped in Marseille when he probably should have played. And then he comes back and scores a wonder try that bails Galthié out of jail.
Yeah.
But they've been how they've gone backwards this season has been quite staggering.
What about the message it sent that DuPont isn't in the team and he's playing 100 metres up the road or whatever, Tom? You know, it's not just that he's not on the field. It's that he sent a message that sevens or something else is more important to him and the team feel a little bereft.
Well, the team is bereft as well. I don't know the politics of it, but the team is bereft. It's not just him, it's Entomac, it's Flamand as well. Like, I mean, he's a hugely influential player for them. So,
Gelange, they're missing a few, yeah.
Gelange, they are missing plenty, you know. And you have to factor that into the equation. But even allowing for that, you know, that performance, and we talk about the controversy at the end and various other things. Scotland are hurting, but they're also hurting because they know they should have won that game.
Yeah. They were, you France know, were that, there for the taking, Tom.
France were there for the taking. This is a desperately poor French team, mm-hmm. and Scotland lost to them. And we can argue till the cows come home about the ball being down and all the rest of it. But they lost, you know, and they should have won. And France were all over the place. Mm. The lineout was poor. They're handing it. Peno dropped the ball a couple of times. Dante dropped it. Jalabert dropped it. I mean, the ball was wet, but it wasn't that wet. You know, they created a couple of things in attack. BLBRE, Ficu, not a lot else.
Nolan Legarrick looks. I think they should start him from now on.
Yeah.
That pass.
Galtier is a terrible selector, by the way.
Is it? Yes.
He's got so much talent and he's wasting it.
Yes, completely.
And your man Tuilagi comes on. Now, Tuilagi, I don't know if you've seen this, but Tuilagi enters the rock and he punches somebody. Like, that guy, for me, is not a rugby player. He's just a massive lump. And I don't know if he's going to be cited, but it's pretty clear. He enters the rock and he thumps somebody.
Mm.
They got away with that.
The replays aren't too conclusive on that. Just on the DuPont rule, Jerry, what do you think is the best solution?
Ooh, they have to do something about it. Like say, 3 seconds, the referee, if right now you can go forward. It can't just be indefinite.
Or how about the catcher is allowed to run 10 metres instead of 5 before you can advance?
Yeah, yeah.
And then he's really got it. He's incentivized to counterattack.
Yeah. It's just ridiculous how many rules there are in this game, though, isn't it? How many laws? And they have
O'Gara
to keep amending them.
Prompted to tweet
but do they
about
not
it,
have to be quite a lot of them?
Is
it being overcomplicated? I've seen this said a lot. There's just too many. It shouldn't be all on the referees. And you said it earlier as well. 3 of the quarterfinals were dictated by referees. But that's been the way for as long as I remember.
Yeah.
Is there another way?
I think it's more than ever.
Well, you see, we keep adding new ones to solve all problems. But as Shane Horgan said, if you were to start rugby again, you certainly wouldn't come up with this model. We've just been at it for 100-odd years, and it's just got it more and more complicated. And we weren't expecting athletes like we have today.
All right. Listen, Jerry, Tom, we won't solve that one in its entirety right now. Thanks so much. Cheers.
Cheers.
Excuse me for interrupting you, John. I hate to do this. He didn't turn up for the first match.
Hang on a minute. Did he get to the Euros? Did he get to the Euros, Ken?
Because he was doing a gig for the BBC's holiday programme.
It's the best thing in the world for you because it's full of protein.
I looks around. There's Sherry Duff. Duffer's that.
Why are we giving him the job then?
Wait, hang on. Sorry. Okay. Sorry, John. Go
if he got to the Euros. Do you think you're going to get to the Euros?
For Stephen Kenny, Ken.
Frank Darcy. It's Franchenko.
It is.
You see who is in, and then it's, it's Franchenko signed off at the end. Franchenko says, lads, many thanks for keeping the Ireland managerial updates flowing. As uninspiring as it has been so far, it has been good to have someone keeping the finger on the pulse / attempting CPR on the whole process where required. I am interested to hear the different takes. The FAI wants someone with a footprint here in Ireland. Fans like Murph want someone capable and from left field who is not one of the usual suspects like Steve Bruce and Robbie Keane. Ken wants an ambitious up-and-coming manager with coaching experience, but notes with disappointment that taking the Ireland job could undermine your reputation as an ambitious manager, especially if QPR or Blackburn have a vacancy. Surely the only candidate to tick all these boxes is right under our noses in Jim McGuinness. Man management credentials are unparalleled, a proven winner, only 51 years of age with 10 years soccer coaching experience in 3 different leagues. Is highly rated by coaches like Roger Schmidt. His pressing style not a million miles from Stephen Kenny's possession blueprint for the team, so it would be a continuity candidate at least. Could even keep his role for now with Donegal. I think we would all like something a bit different. We just need to get him onto Premier Sports to confirm. Yours in sport, Franchenko.
Listen, you know, Franchenko's credentials speak for themselves. However,
long time listener, regular emailer.
Yeah.
So was that regular? I haven't seen him from Franchenko in a while, so I was happy to read it.
Regular.
Yeah, still going. Good man, Franchenko.
I screen your emails.
Thanks, Simon.
Jim
Franchenko emails in an awful lot of shite. So Simon just sends me the best, though.
Not necessarily Franchenko, but
yeah, of course. Jim McGuinness.
Yeah.
Charlotte Independent Son. It's his only head coaching job.
Mm-hmm.
One game. One win in 14 games.
Ah, oh, Jesus Christ.
You know, I am all, as Franchenko says, I am all about left field.
Mm.
One win in 14 games in his only job, you know, head coach.
If he had, say, 4 wins in 14 games.
Well, if he had 4 wins, maybe we'd have a wider, sample size. I just think, you know, he's doing great things with Donegal. Everyone in Donegal is very happy to have him. And I feel like that's one of the 26 counties involved in the makeup of our national football team. And I think that robbing one of that 26 for what will almost certainly be not a very successful appointment. I just, I can't see
good
it.
Press,
I wouldn't
good
do
press
that.
Conferences, good interviews.
Not
yeah,
right.
I mean, all right. I mean, yeah, all right. Yeah. Like, interesting to start, but will very quickly become surly and uncommunicative if if results don't go his way.
Is that very different to previous incumbents?
No,
I don't think Stephen Kenny was surly and uncommunicative, to be fair.
Yeah.
Not, his communication wasn't very good.
Yeah, but it wouldn't have been uncommunicative. Yeah. I mean, he was trying to be communicative and failed a lot, particularly in the post-match interviews. So anyone, listen, I, with respect, I don't think Jim McGuinness is the answer.
Okay, we'll go with that. Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Owen, and thank you, Simon.
Thanks, Murph. Thanks, Owen.
Thanks for listening. US Murph, Super Bowl chat tomorrow. Champions League knockout round start this week as well. So sign up now to the World Service on secondcaptains.com. Remember, Second Captains Podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network. If you become a member, you will hear all episodes
yeah,
without
the,
ads.
Yeah, mention the ads thing, Owen.
Yeah, and you'll be supporting independent journalism. And you will, what was the other thing I was going to say?
Oh, you'll really enjoy it?
You'll just really enjoy it. It's good fun. If you like this show, you'll like the other shows later in the week.
I mean, it would stand to reason. Yeah, like, it's not like, you know, we're holding
it's actually a no-brainer.
Here.
Why aren't you signed up already?
It seems odd.
Mad.
Whose phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's World Service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.